This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Stipe breaks the record. Cormier dominates Volkan. Robert Whittaker's injury does not sound like a whole lot of fun. And UFC on Fox Charlotte headliner Derek Brunson joins us to discuss his fight with Jacare Souza. You know, UFC 220, Joe. Two biggest weight classes in the UFC. Two most dominant performances. We have Stipe Miocic regaining his title, or retaining his title. And that's Stipe Miocic. I still got to get used to that.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's totally changed it. It's been frustrating.
Well, you know what? When Anik started saying Miocic, I was sitting next to Robin. It was in Dallas before his last fight against Junior Dos Santos. And he was like, Stipe Miocic fights Junior Dos Santos later tonight. And I looked at Robin and I go, I guess that's how it's pronounced. Because John Anik is like meticulous with names.
For sure. I mean, it's the proper way to say it. But from when you've been saying it the one way for so
three
long.
3 years
it,
or 4 years.
Yeah, it gets weird now. And I mean, I guess if you ask him, I don't know if it bothers him or anything. Do you know what he thinks about it?
Yeah, I've overheard him say, oh, people keep mispronouncing my last name. So he wants to be Miocic.
Miocic?
I mean, it's his last name. You know, all you know is your
Croatian,
name.
Right? Yeah. It's Croatian background. Yeah. So he wants to represent the Croats.
Well, that was one hell of a win for Stipe. I mean, he dominated him from bell to bell, I thought. The first round was a little bit closer. It was weird. That first round felt like it was 10 minutes. And then the rest of the fight seemed like it flew by until around the fourth, and then it started to slow down again.
Yeah, it's just those heavy bombs in the first round from Francis were just scary. But I thought, you know, Stipe did a good job at avoiding those punches. Scary to do, but he had the right mentality. There's no way Stipe is going to catch punches from Francis on his guard. I mean, just too powerful. Even if you're defending your head and he hits your arms or your hands on your head, it's going to shake your head enough to knock you out. So Stipe's like, hey, I got to move my head. And the way he was moving his head, man, I was just cheering, man. Like, defensively, he just did such a good job at, I mean, they're very looping punches that you can see, but they were just missing him. And he was just slipping with his hands down. It was pretty impressive to see, and it was pretty entertaining in that aspect.
I actually thought that was the turning point of the fight, and it was that early into the first. But as soon as Francis started throwing, and Stipe
he started countering right away. Yeah. He slipped and countered. Once he found that right-hand counter, and it was just over.
Once that rhythm picked up, you could tell Francis
slip and rip,
like, okay.
Man, slip and rip. Pulled away, bang, pulled the slip, and just kept countering back. And that was his best shot. And, I mean, once he got inside, you saw him throw it. Like, I mean, very impressive. Very impressive. Like, that's how you beat those big looping power guys. You have to get on the inside. You got to throw shorter, you know, punches on the inside, and that's what he did.
Yeah, you know, Francis, I think, got frustrated pretty early on, and it was apparent to me at, like, one point, it was about halfway through the first, I'm like, this guy can't win this fight.
Yeah, no way.
It was just like, you know, Stipe was just on. He wasn't letting Francis make any contact with him. He was able to take him down and basically turned Francis's game plan upside down, and he just had nothing for him. And you could tell on the ground, you know, Rogan was saying, this guy's got nothing on the ground. He was just laying flat. I mean, the one thing that Francis does have on the ground is he's very explosive in terms of getting back to his feet.
He's very good at
using his power, and his strength to get back up, to body his opponent and get his way back up. But eventually that ran out.
Yeah, you see the size of his legs and his glutes and his quads are huge. So, I mean, and no matter how big you are, he has that strength and the power to get up. But it just shows you, and I mean, the classic example of he spent his time training at the UFC Institute, and where they have the highest performance of, you know, whether it be swimming, you know, cryotherapies, hot tubs, saunas, all of that is great. But we got to remember this is martial arts, mixed martial arts. And the most important thing in this sport is doing the sport. And I mean, I get, you know, all this heat on Instagram and social media about running. And I think it's ridiculous because a lot of fighters are going and running, you know, 10K every day, where it's taking them, I don't even know how long it takes a 10K run, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. But really, their punches suck. Their technique is terrible. They have no good footwork. They're not practicing the sport. So that's what I'm saying. If you work full-time and you have limited time to train the things that have a purpose. And that's what it is. So for Ngannou, there's no surprise. He should have spent a lot more time with his wrestling and his conditioning. And I think they failed him in a bad way where, you know, I'm a big science guy, but it is martial arts. You got to have martial arts mixed with the science. And I think they went too science-based with him.
I think calling yourself a science guy is copyright. That's like, that's Bill Nye's trademark.
Is it Bill Nye?
Yeah, we'll have to erase that from the show.
All right, delete.
But like you said, with Francis, it seemed like his ground game was completely non-existent.
Non-existent.
He had no grappling whatsoever for Stipe. And, you know, one interesting thing that after the fight was I spoke to Fabricio Werdum afterwards, and you could tell that he thought that Francis was in over his head, but nobody had said it leading up to the fight. You know what I mean? Nobody had come out and said, "Yeah, I don't think Francis is ready," because you saw what he did to Overeem,
yep.
And that's just no joke. You know, I did read some guys, you know, on social media. One guy's name is Luca Fury. He's a guy that is, you know, one of the big betting advice guys in the UFC, and he was never sold on Francis. He always said, you know, Francis is knocking guys out that have been knocked out many times. Let's see how he does against the guy with the chin. And you know, Stipe's chin wasn't tested all that much, but at the same time, it certainly was not an easy night at the office for Francis Ngannou.
No, I mean, even when he hit Stipe, like, it did damage. Like, Stipe's eye swelled up, so you know there was a lot of power in it. But I just think, again, just as we're going to talk about soon, the co-main event, he came to the title very quickly, and a lot of times it catches up. And I think for him now, we got to look at it back to what I always say, martial arts. Now he's got to look back as a martial artist and what does he have to do? And he's going to improve as an athlete that way. He's got to go to the drawing board and work, and it's just going to help him out. And I can, you know, I think he's, what, 4 years in, you just mentioned to me? So
yeah.
Four years in, still very new.
Yeah, he's got
still
lots, very lots new. Of time. Well, this is the way that I'd like to see the heavyweight division shake out. We've got Curtis Blaydes fighting Mark Hunt in Australia next month. If Blaydes gets a win there, in a good win against Mark Hunt, I'd like to see him get the next title shot. You know, I did a poll, and I gave four options for who should get the next heavyweight title shot, because I think that the four options are pretty clear as to what they should be. One was Fabricio.
Okay.
One was Cain Velasquez. One was Alexander Volkov, and one was Curtis Blaydes if he beats Hunt. And Curtis Blaydes, if he beats Hunt, was the lowest in terms of people's feedback.
Yeah.
That's what I'd personally like to see.
Yeah, he just doesn't have that name yet.
Yeah, overwhelmingly, people want to see Cain Velasquez fight for the title.
Now,
well, here's why I don't agree.
Okay.
Cain Velasquez has fought twice in the last 4 years.
Okay.
One is a loss to Fabricio Werdum, where he lost the title. The other is a win over Travis Brown, who hasn't won in 3 years. I think he's 0-4 in the last 4 years, or 0-3 in the last 4 years. That kind of resume, plus the injuries, and, you know, what happens if he beats Stipe?
Yeah.
You know, he comes and gets fast-tracked to a title shot because he's been the champion before, comes out and beats Stipe. Like, when's the next time this guy's going to fight? Like, yeah, you can't rely on a guy like that, in my opinion, if you're a promotion that's trying to make money and wants to have active champions, because Stipe's a pretty active champion, although he only fought once in 2017. But he's fought once so far this year. He's going to have a kid in the summer. Maybe he wants to get one in before he has that kid, but... Like, if you look at a guy like Blaydes, you may as well build new contenders. You know, it's important to build new contenders at heavyweight. I did speak to Fabricio Werdum, as I mentioned, and he wants to get the next shot. His two wins are over Walt Harris and Martin Tabura. Like,
not top
those
contenders.
Those are not top wins. And again, Fabricio's clock is ticking. He's 40. You know, he needs to get another shot. If he wants to be a champion this year, he needs another shot. And the way that he lost to Stipe, he admits, you know, I beat myself. I should not have rushed at Stipe Miocic or Stipe Miocic. That was a bad move. And he's acknowledged that. I think that that's a big part of his learning. But at the same time, you know, I just don't think that he's, you know, a title shot's warranted after wins over those two specific guys.
Now, what's your take with DC winning and the talk about DC possibly going to heavyweight?
Well, DC shut it down. He says, I don't really want to fight at heavyweight.
He shut it down? Okay.
Yeah,
the last I read, he was still thinking about it, and I thought it would be something great for him, to be honest with you.
It's a big fight. It's the biggest fight that he could have.
Yeah, but, and I mean, especially with this John Jones thing that's always in his head, and every interview he has, he's talking and saying how that ghost of John Jones of, man, if he wants to be the best in the world, he's always going to have, well, John Jones beat you twice. Like,
yeah.
He always has that. But now all of a sudden you go and you fight Miocic and you do have a good performance, and I think he could actually beat him potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then you go down and there goes the John Jones ghost.
The other problem, though, is that Cain is back and he doesn't want to step on Cain's feet. I didn't realize that Cain's only 34. That surprised me. I thought he was older.
He looks a lot older.
Yeah, well, he's older in fight years for sure. But, you know, I'd be okay watching a Cain versus Stipe. I just think it's risky. I think it's risky for the UFC to put Cain in a position to win a title when his injuries are so recurring and he's not a consistent fighter.
Like, I mean, going back to your Blaydes, but I just think he hasn't built himself enough. And
well,
lately we've
say,
seen with
the
UFC, it's all about ticket sales now, right?
If he gets a win over Mark Hunt, we're talking about a guy who has the longest winning streak outside of Stipe in the heavyweight division. So he'll have that under his belt. That is if you disclude the no contest that he has for a marijuana violation, which was a commission thing, not a USADA thing.
Okay.
Which, you know, like he was fighting, I think, in the Texas commission where they have a much stricter rules about the amount of metabolites you can have in your system. Personally, I mean, it was a dominant win for him, and I don't think you should hold that against
him. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you consider that a win, which at the time it was, and it was a pretty dominant win, he'll have the longest heavyweight win streak outside of Stipe. And to me, he's a young guy. He's got good wrestling. His striking keeps getting better and better. He's a guy I'd like to see Stipe test himself against.
For sure.
And same with Kane. If Kane looks good, I'd love to see that fight. I worry a little bit about Kane being the future champion and about not being able to defend the belt and more interim titles. And that's the concern that I have. I think from a promotional standpoint, it's the most marketable fight you can make by far is Kane versus Stipe.
Oh, absolutely. Kane still has that big name surrounding him, and I think that's what makes the fight, as a fan, you know, I want to see it for sure. But like you
champion.
Said, as for the company, it doesn't make the most sense. But it does. Curtis Blaydes just has to build it.
It does from a short-term standpoint. From a short-term standpoint, it makes sense because you can sell that
fight.
Which
seems to be the way UFC's going right now, right? So who knows?
In some regards. But I mean, I think... You know, what happens if Blaydes goes in there and beats Stipe? Like, now you got a young heavyweight champion, a guy who's like 24, 25, great wrestler, good striker. He's going to keep getting better.
But would the UFC want that? Probably not, right?
Maybe.
I mean, can they market him the way? Like, I mean, they're having, apparently, according to Stipe, they're having trouble marketing him properly. And I mean, look at him. He's got a great story of him being the firefighter, the family guy, the homegrown guy. So, I mean, I would like to see it. I'm all for young champions. I'm all for new young blood dominating. Man, that's what I'm for. Like, I mean, I got a chance, and I mean, I hope all these other fighters get chances. But entertainment, man. Entertainment.
Yeah, that's what matters, I guess. Well, you know, I got into a bit of a squabble after the fight with Dana White.
Yes.
I don't understand why. I'll preface it by saying I really respect Dana and what Dana's built with the UFC.
Yeah,
and I think he's a nice guy.
Second.
He's always been good to me.
Yeah.
Always been good to me, and I don't like rubbing him the wrong way, but I felt in this case he was misunderstanding what I was saying. You know, I was trying to say that Stipe, you know, Stipe's a big star now. If they thought Francis was going to be a big star if he beat Stipe, doesn't Stipe get that same kind of respect for beating a guy that they built up in the manner they did with Francis? And frankly, as Dana said, that Francis built up. I mean, Francis built himself up. He was knocking guys out.
Yeah,
destroying guys.
From my perspective, it seemed like you asked the right question because that was the storyline. But I think he was just annoyed with people just asking him about, you know, putting Stipe in the back burner. But I mean, one, if I'm Stipe, I'm excited because my fight's being promoted more now, which is good. And I just like your point was, you know, Stipe just beat this big monster you guys built up, which is positive. But I think Dana was just annoyed with everyone asking him about why he's not valuing Stipe.
But yeah, but again, that wasn't really what I was saying either.
No,
it's not that they don't value Stipe. To me, if the right move is to build a contender, you want to make your champion look good by beating a guy that is considered a world beater, a guy that people, you know, that was favored against Stipe in Vegas and in the sports books, a guy that people thought was going to beat Stipe. Stipe comes out and destroys him. Now suddenly, you should be saying, "Well, this is our heavyweight champ. This guy is unbelievable." But instead, the narrative kind of shifted, and I was trying to get the train back on the positivity
side.
Let's be positive about Stipe.
Yeah.
Stipe's a beast.
Yeah, and he just beat this big monster, and he was an underdog.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah, so
I totally agree.
I didn't understand why he took exception with that. I wasn't trying to paint him in a bad light or the promotion in a bad light. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
If I was the promoter, it would have been Francis' time for me too, and I would have wanted Francis to win. I'm not saying that they did,
but
I would have liked to see Francis because you can build Francis up huge, and I just don't think the problem I think Stipe has is he doesn't call guys out. It's one of his rules. He doesn't like calling guys out.
We're back to entertainment value.
It's
entertainment. What it becomes.
And I mean I think he's an entertaining fighter. Like I mean,
for
look
sure.
at him. He had three first round finishes in a row before he beat Francis by decision. But I mean, there is an element of marketing involved. There is an element of doing interviews. You know, and whenever I speak to Stipe during fight week, all he says is, I'm just focused on my opponent. I'm focused on my opponent. It's like, well, you know, give us something here. You need to build your own narrative.
Yeah, and the issue too now, and it's a big problem for fighters, is this Conor money that's been going around. So now all of a sudden, all of these fighters, and I'm not gonna just say fighters, I'm gonna say champions. If you're Stipe, and we've heard Demetrius Johnson say the same thing over and over again, they feel I'm dominated my division. I've created a record of the most title defenses. I want to be paid the same as someone like Conor, but.
Yeah.
But that's what they're not understanding. And I mean, I think I'm hearing it from listening to Rogan on his MMA shows. Like even Tyron Woodley, he wasn't overly happy the way the UFC's pushing him for these super fights. And I think a lot of these guys are looking for Conor money, but they're not understanding what Conor is doing for himself and that it's him creating this hype and this buzz rather than the UFC.
100%. It's not necessarily on the promotion to build these guys up.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't control the way people feel about you.
Yep.
That's the part that I think a lot of fighters need to wrap their head around. All you can do is be the best you. Be the best you. And if people gravitate towards it, great. And if they don't gravitate towards it, what can you do better to become the best you?
Yeah, and listen to, I highly recommend it for two reasons. This last Rogan MMA show with Rose Namajunas, it's just positive to hear someone, you know, she's like, I don't care what people think. Like, she's to herself, shaved head, dressed differently. It's just bringing a different positive light to the sport, and she's just being herself. And I think she's going to gain a lot of fans and stardom doing that. And also, I also got a shout out on that, my kickboxing channel. So, yeah, Rogan. Rogan gave me a quick shout out, so if you're listening, go on my YouTube channel, Joseph Valtellini, and subscribe. So,
you know what? This is the crazy thing about it. And the UFC's been around for 25 years. There's been one Conor McGregor.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
There's no blueprint for becoming Conor McGregor unless you're Conor McGregor.
Absolutely.
He has a whole country behind him. He knows how to entertain. He knows how to talk, and he knows how to back that up with wins. And he also knows how to lose. He's good at losing. Yeah. When he lost to Nate Diaz, his star wasn't affected. Came right back. Wanted the rematch. Won the rematch, and his star was as big as ever, ends up fighting Floyd Mayweather.
One of the hardest things as a manager, as a fighter, as someone in the fight game trying to build your business, it's easy to promote fights and promote yourself when you have fights. It's simple. You have more media attention, you have more videos, you're in shape, so everything's easier to promote. But the hardest time to promote yourself is in between fights. So that's where you got to try to find to keep yourself relevant. Like, if you're in between fights and you're fighting once or twice a year, what are you doing in between that time to build yourself? And that's a tough point. And that's the kind of point I was making when we talked to Paige VanZant the other day. I was saying how fighters have to build themselves sometimes outside of the market. Only being inside the sport twice a year isn't enough. So that's why when Paige did her Dancing with the Stars, she just brought a whole amount of people to the sport, on her support. So, I mean, she gained a lot in between that time. And that's what fighters need to do. Find things to do and build yourself in between fights and keep growing. Keep building your brand. You can't just stop there and expect all this money and Conor McGregor attention to come your way. We saw it, I mean, talking about exceptions, we saw it with George St. Pierre. He's one of the few who built such a huge popularity with technique and class and skill. So,
right.
I mean, there's
only
few.
One GSP in the
one
last 25
GSP
years.
One GSP and one McGregor.
One Ronda.
So, yeah.
That's
there you
it.
Go.
Has there been another female fighter that's anywhere near as successful as
you
Ronda?
You got to have something different. You can't bring the same package. You've got to have something different, in
and
my
hey,
opinion.
Hey, if you can stop that many opponents in a row inside of a minute like Ronda did, you're going to be a star.
Absolutely.
But that's not something you
build
can control.
Something. Like, I tell my fighters all the time, like, if you're going to go into a fight and you're just going to be mediocre, I said, you always have to have one thing that makes you. Make people so excited for you to see you do that one thing. So, for example, me, it was my low kicks. Everyone came in. When you saw me in the ring, the anticipation of me throwing that hard low kick, everybody was waiting. Think about the fighter who has that high kick. You're just waiting on the edge of your seat for that one moment of the high kick. Krokop created a whole career off of it.
Anderson Silva with the knees.
So fighters need to find something and make it theirs and make it exciting and continue to do it. So every time you fight, you have this built-in automatic, you know, hype and excitement to your fight.
Yeah. And in the co-main event, Daniel Cormier, I think we should discuss him. He looked fantastic, and the thing that I loved about that was the fans in Boston were cheering him on. And, you know, Cormier sometimes doesn't get the respect that he deserves because of his feud with Jon Jones, but I thought that it was very warranted. He had a very dominant performance over Volkan Ozdemir.
I think DC said it the best, and the one thing he said after the fight and even before the fight, he goes, there's levels to this thing. And, I mean, I think that was the real big story to this fight. He just out-dominated Ozdemir had one tool, and if he didn't have that one tool, he wasn't hiding what he was going to do. But once that one weapon is gone, you got to have other tools. I mean, that's the beauty of mixed martial arts. You can't just rely on one thing. So if one thing wasn't working, he didn't have the ability to adjust and adapt, and the result was what everyone predicted.
You know, I thought this had a fairly clear turning point also. I thought, first of all, I was very impressed with Volkan's ability to push forward at the beginning and not worry about the takedown. And then when the takedown started coming, he was able to stuff them. But once DC striking started to come through, that's when Volkan was like, oh,
it's
yeah, this guy can do
yeah.
this also.
It's a little different. yeah, what, once, yeah. Because once DC, the way DC throws, he throws it like really aggressively, lunging. Like he doesn't just stand in your face. He's outside and then he comes in very aggressively. So when he hits you, your natural reaction is to shell up. As soon as you shell up your head to defend your head, there's that quick moment of pause where, boom, the yeah. wrestler can grab you. He can shoot you. He can clinch up to you. So that's what DC does amazing. He's going to lunge at you, freeze you up, boom, then you're on your back, and then he's on your, you know, he's choking you out. So I think that's how we planned it, that's how we visualized it. I think anyone who predicted that was the way it was going to go, but I was guilty. I ended up I do like little side bets on bet 365, and I actually put a few bucks on Ozdemir to win in the first round, but that's okay. All right,
come on, man.
I tried, hey.
Actually,
I tried.
If he was going to win, that's the way he
was going to
win.
I had my intuition on the last week's episode, and I just felt something. So I did it, and I failed, hey, but hey, not bad. That's yeah. it.
Cormier, you know, I thought with 10 seconds left in that first round, if he would have had another 10 seconds with that choke was pretty deep.
Yeah.
So Ozdemir got saved by the bell at the beginning. And then in the second round, you could tell that he was just in his own league there. I mean, the thing about Cormier is he is going to leave the sport as being the second best light heavyweight in the history of MMA behind Jon Jones.
But that's why I feel that heavyweight fight I like. I don't mind it.
You know, I was actually thinking about his heavyweight resume. You know, he's
very dominant in
Strikeforce. He beat Barnett. Like, he beat big names at heavyweight. But the crazy thing about it is he might be one of the only guys that will be able to retire undefeated at heavyweight. Like, if he doesn't fight
I think it's
again,
a great fight. I'm not just saying it. I think it's a great fight for him. I think his high-level wrestling could do enough with Stipe to do well. I think he has potential to win, you know, both divisions if he really wanted to and make it out. I mean, he has such a successful career on the mic. I mean, realistically, he has maybe one or two fights left. Why not go out with the biggest fights
Can
possible?
Can you imagine he beats Stipe, becomes the champion
and then retires.
And then retires. There's two, well, that,
that's
two
crazy.
Open divisions.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love it. Why not? That's what I'm saying. At that point, the name Jon Jones won't even be brought up in his attention.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
Mean, at that,
that
point.
That would certainly cement his legacy for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that's my point. So, although, I mean, it's not a bad option. If he has, say, two fights left, maybe those are the two. One against, you know, Stipe, and then one more in his light heavyweight, and he rides off.
Yeah, you know, he mentioned to me he feels his legacy's already been cemented. So with that, I think in his mind, he's kind of playing with house money now. But, you know, kudos to DC. And again, I think that the fans in Boston deserve some kudos for cheering for him when he's a guy that a lot of people boo. You know, I was on the Luke Thomas show yesterday on Sirius.
Nice.
Or was it on Monday? It was whatever, either yesterday or Monday.
He worked with Glory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, back when Glory was on Spike.
Friends.
Yeah. So Luke was talking to me about UFC 220, and he said, do you think that Daniel's a babyface now? He's a guy that's going to get cheered. If him and Jon Jones have a rematch at any point, he's going to get cheered? I said, no, he's not.
Because
Jon Jones is one of these guys that it seems the fans love the bad guy.
Yeah,
you know? They love the bad guy.
For
and
but Cormier, he has this nice side to him that you love after, because Jon Jones will come out and he'll start crying on camera. And we're like, oh, man, I feel bad for him.
And you respect the DC after the last fight.
Yeah, like you just feel for him, you know? He's genuine outside of his little addiction, right?
And people are
which
like, oh,
is,
I party
not a bad
too.
Person.
Yeah, I party too.
We all like to. Rob Ford like to. We all like to party once in here and there. So, I mean, you can't look at him that bad as a terrible person.
Except Jon Jones as a fighter was far better than Rob Ford as a mayor.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Rob Ford, may he rest in peace. Coming up on the 2-year anniversary of his death in March.
Yeah.
The reason I know that is because it happened on the day my son was born. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So my son's birthday is the anniversary of his death every year. But shifting gears to the rest of this fight card. Not a whole lot more to discuss. I thought that Abdul Razak Al-Hassan uppercut was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, beautifully timed.
Really well timed and really well, you know, just great delivery. It was weird that they actually made that rematch, but I guess they felt that there wasn't enough closure with that first fight because they thought it got stopped early. Personally, I didn't think it got stopped early, but that might just be me. And he gets that closure that he wanted over
that
Hamassi.
Uppercut, man. I mean, I've said it. I think the two the two most underutilized strikes in fighting are low kicks and uppercuts. Mm-hmm. Always have said it, low kicks and uppercuts. I mean, that was just a perfect example how effective it is in MMA. Guys head dip in that direction. Guys have to throw that uppercut more, and that's just a beautiful example why it's so successful.
Yeah, especially when you're going against guys that aren't very good grapplers.
They dip their head all the time. Yeah. Even if someone's scared of your strikes, they're going to try to dip your head, mix the uppercut. It's there all the time.
I thought the Font and Almeida fight was pretty good.
Yeah, Font looked incredible.
For the life of me, I can't understand why you put Francis Barbosa on a main card. Yeah, like, every single one of his fights is not interesting.
I don't know. It's just...
No disrespect.
But, I mean, should have... I mean, three of the fights on them really shouldn't have been pay-per-view fights, historically.
Well, Font and Almeida, I think, is a good opening.
Opener, but...
And I think they were trying to...
But that could headline nicely. That could have headlined, the TSN portion.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean...
And I think that the Calvin Kattar and Shane Burgos fight was very good.
It was a great fight.
It was a good way to build up another guy in the UFC.
It was definitely a great fight, but I found I still feel they put all of their eggs on the two title fights on building the card.
Yeah, this was almost a boxing card.
Yeah, two main cards, and the other ones, great fights, great potential contenders, good excitement. But I mean, we're talking entertainment value, and I mean, I don't think it was there. Compared to some of the other cards we've seen recently. Yeah.
Well, one fight I'd really like to see, actually, if we go back to Cormier, is Cormier versus Gustafsson, too. I thought that first fight was very good.
I agree.
I think that would be a fun fight. Gustafsson's younger, outside of DC,
he's got to be the best in the division.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, he's beaten pretty much everybody else outside of, like, Misha Sirkunov, who's coming off two losses. So that I think, is the fight to make in the light heavyweight division.
I agree.
All right, well, let's move ahead to UFC... in Charlotte. We're going to have Derek Brunson on the show a little bit later on and go through this card. I think that the main event between Souza and Brunson's a very good one. I think Brunson's improved a lot since their first fight where he was knocked out by Souza. He was undefeated at the time, but Brunson is, again, a loss to Whittaker is nothing to be ashamed of. That was a fight, big
contenders.
Yeah, and then the Silva loss, a lot of people thought he won. I wasn't among them. I actually thought Anderson won that fight. I'm in the minority for that opinion. But it wasn't a super interesting fight either way. But, Brunson now has two in a row, including a win over Lyoto Machida in dominant fashion. So this is going to be a great fight.
Yeah, and their first fight was 2012, Strikeforce.
Yeah. 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And I mean, the only other loss Brunson has in the UFC other than Whittaker and Silva is Yoel Romero.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, you can't really look at his losses. They're all legit losses.
And he hurt Romero, I believe, in that fight in the first round, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember the fight, but yeah, it was.
I might be wrong.
It got fight of the night. It was fight of the night bonus.
Yeah, I think that was the fight. I think that was a fight where
It was a TKO. It was a TKO win for Romero, a fight of the night, third
but
round.
I think what happened was, if I remember correctly, because I haven't watched it in a long time, but Brunson, I think, knocked him down in the first and was actually doing really well in the fight and was on his way to winning and then got caught in the third, if I recall. But I might be wrong on that. As for the rest of the card, it's not super stacked. I mean, especially for a Fox card. To see Drew Dober and Frank Camacho on that is not great.
I actually just met Dennis Bermudez. So Glory sometimes has Pluto TV come in and they do like the undercard fights, and Dennis Bermudez was calling it, so we got to just hang out and talk. So I'm excited to see him and Feely fight. I was impressed with Feely last time, so I think the co-main event is one to watch for.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great fight. And I think it'll be a good spot for Dennis Bermudez to
shine, man. Yeah. And I mean, you got to look at the I like Eric Koch and Green.
Yeah,
I think that's a great fight. I think Bobby Green is very good boxing, always comes to fight.
Always in fun fights.
Yeah, always fun. You know, very good record experience. Eric Koch, Duke Rufus style, good kickboxing. You know, I think that could be a really good fight.
Was he a WBC champion? It was at least a WBC contender.
Yeah, he was a good contender. But, yeah. I mean, good camp, good team. You know, solid work.
He's looked good at lightweight as well.
I think this is a great matchup. Good fight for the feet.
Yeah, and then you've got Mirsad Bektik and... Gotofredo Pepe, that's a good fight for them in the prelims as well. I mean, Bektik coming off a disappointing loss where he was absolutely dominating Darren Elkins, and then in the comeback of the year.
That was
Elkins
the comeback
was
of the year performance. Yeah,
but Bektik has been a long-time big prospect. And same with Gregor Gillespie, who's on the main card.
Yeah, but Bektik's still 11-1, very talented.
Very, very talented. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. That's going to be a good one. And then another one to look for, which I'm shocked it's buried on the Fight Pass card, is Nico Price and George Sullivan. Sullivan coming off of a 2-year suspension from USADA. I believe it's either 18 months or 2 years. I think he failed two different tests, if I'm not mistaken. But he's back in action. And Nico Price, I think, is a really good prospect. He's coming off a loss, but I think he's a guy to watch. So
yeah, the hybrid. He's 10-1. Very talented. Yeah.
Who did he just lose to? Do you have that?
Vincent Luque.
Oh yeah, Vicente Luque. Yeah, Luque is a guy who I think is very good, a big up and comer. That was a fight between two guys where it was like, okay, let's see who the better prospect is, and Luque came out on
top.
Yeah,
that was October 2017.
Yeah, so it's fairly recently. Yeah. And in terms of Canadians, we've got Randa Marcos on the card against Juliano Lima. And Marcos coming off. Marcos's career has been win-loss, 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 win-loss. So she had a great win against Carla Esparza. Started to move up, you know, get better and better. She had lost to Courtney Casey before that. And now coming off of a tough split decision loss before this. So
yeah, she with Grasso. I thought she did well that fight. Yeah, I actually thought she won that in my distant memory.
Yeah,
but I thought she did really well.
I thought Grasso won the third and Marcos won.
Yeah, I remember it being very close. But yeah, it'll be a good fight with her and Lima.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to see a Canadian in action this weekend. First Canadian of 2018.
Yeah, she's really tough, man. I think Randa Marcos has done really good for a Canadian MMA.
And her backstory is pretty incredible. Do you know her backstory?
No.
So she was born with her family in Iraq and raised in Iraq. And she's part of a Christian, I forget what they're called. I don't know if it's Coptic Christians or she's part of a Christian religion that was persecuted in Iraq. Huh. And her family had to escape from Iraq, and she'd seen like family members get shot and stuff like that because they were getting captured, and they managed to escape to Canada.
Yeah.
So yeah. So she has a pretty.
I thought she had some Greek background or something.
No,
with
it's
Marcos.
Iraqi.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, the Iraqi. Last name maybe was a little Greek.
Yeah.
But no, good for her.
Yeah. So that's amazing. A pretty incredible backstory for her. So let's go take a look at our picks, Joe. Last week before UFC 220. I had $95.50. You had $64.50. If you're unfamiliar with this, yeah, we take a fantasy $10, not real money, and we make our pick of the week based on the betting lines. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the lines yet, if you have a pick, but I'm coming off of a push because I had Marina Moroz last week, who did not compete. She was scratched early in the week, and that fight was canceled, and she's been rescheduled for an upcoming fight card against Angela Hill, your pal.
Yeah,
and you had Stipe Miocic. I gotta keep correcting it. I said Miocic when I interviewed him. That's what matters.
So yeah, I made some money back.
Yeah, so yeah, you're starting to nip at my heels a little bit. You're at $80.50 to my $95.50. So looking at this week, do you have any selections? Do you have anything, or do you want me to go ahead?
You go first.
Okay, so I've got a parlay. It's Nico Price.
Okay.
Parlayed with Gregor Gillespie, and. Mirsad Bektik, and that's -110 for the three of them. I'm going for big favorites.
Big favorites.
Yeah, parlay of big favorites.
Huh. Let me take a quick look here.
So if you take those three, you put them together, it's still not even money. But I'm very confident those three will win.
Okay. I'm going to go with Eric Koch to win.
Yeah. All right, Eric Koch at +145.
Yeah, I like it. I like
Bobby
him.
Green.
I think Bobby Green is good, but relies heavily on his boxing. Tends to sometimes keep his chin a little high. Eric, because you trained with my friend Duke Rufus, I'm relying all on you and Duke. So it's all on you, Eric.
You know, Coke is a guy that gets stopped by guys with big power.
You
and
Bobby say Coke
Green,
or
it's
Coke?
Coke.
I thought there was an H sound to it all the time.
He's a guy that gets stopped by guys with big power, and Bobby Green doesn't have big power. But Bobby Green does have great
he's
footwork,
got good,
great technique.
Footwork, good angles, good boxing technique. But
so he could get outpointed, but I don't see him getting stopped by Bobby Green.
No.
But I can't see him stopping Bobby Green if he connects with the right thing, because Coke has really big power.
So do you agree with mine? You like my pick?
That's solid.
That's
I think that line is pretty good.
Yeah, I like the +145 on it. That's why I'm going with it.
Yeah, so... This is an interesting fight card. I think that there are some really interesting fights and good spots here. But I like that parlay. That's what I'm going with. I'm really torn on Jacare and our next guest, Derek Brunson, because, I mean, we saw the fight. We saw Souza win. But I know Brunson's gotten better. But I feel like Souza's also gotten better. Like, Jacare has been almost, you know, he lost to Whitaker. And he lost to Yoel Romero, barely. And those are like two losses where it's like, yeah, okay, well, most guys are going to lose to those guys.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the scariest to fight.
Because he gets you to the ground, and you're
done. Once he grabs you, you're done. Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's very scary for Brunson.
Yeah, but Brunson has that scary power, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, we saw Souza get knocked out by Whitaker. You don't know how that chin's doing now that he's gotten a bit older, right? Chins don't improve over age. It's not like chins are the opposite of a fine wine.
Yeah, I mean, it's even one concussion.
Chins are like a beer. You want to open it when you buy it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still got it. I still think he's tough. He's been through a lot of wars. I think he looks a lot older than he, he's just been around. Like, he looks older now. He's looking a little weathered, but with age comes experience, and I'm sure he's going to have to try to utilize that. He's 38 years old, so Brunson's talented and powerful. I mean, it's that classic, you know, striker versus ground.
Yep. And even Souza's striking, I think, is very good. So we'll see how it goes. I think Souza has more ways to win, but I think Brunson has a better way to win, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, looking at their record, it just says Jacare, still 25% of his wins by knockout.
Yeah.
But 61 for Brunson. So, I mean, Jacare still has some ability to finish in his hands, and Brunson can finish 22% by submission.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to our next guest. He is in the main event of UFC on Fox in Charlotte. The prelims begin at 5 o'clock Eastern on TSN5 and the main card at 8 p.m. Eastern on TSN5 and CTV2. He is Derek Brunson, and he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Pleased to be joined now by the headliner of this week's UFC on Fox card in Charlotte. His backyard, Derek Brunson. That card also airs on CTV2 in Canada at 8 p.m. Eastern, as well as TSN5. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good. We're good. You know, I watched the Road to the Octagon special for this particular card, and it was great to see you and your family. You know, you'd said you felt that you should already be the champion. Now, with the news that Robert Whittaker's out at UFC 221 and an interim title's being created, and the way the division's gone the last year with GSP and Bisping, do you feel like the timeline for getting a title shot is still a while away?
No, I don't think it's a while away. I'm fighting Jacare and he's ranked third. So if I go out here and have a dominant performance over him, finish him in the first round, I think I could jump to that three spot and be looking at the next title shot, especially with Whitaker being injured. He could be out for a while, you know?
You hear about that injury Dana White actually said it to me over the weekend, that he's got a staph infection in his stomach that was starting to eat away at his organs. That doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun.
Right, yeah. That's the extent that I heard of it. But, yeah, it doesn't sound good. So I'm like, well, he probably going to need a little bit of time to recover, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I don't know. I hope he's able to fight soon, you know. But just in case he isn't, you know, kind of preparing myself for that moment.
And there's some guys that are in the middleweight division that are also, you know, lobbying for a title fight, guys like Kelvin Gastelum, Chris Weidman. Neither of them have a fight coming up. So if you're able to get past Jacare, that could be it for the number one contendership.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, you're known for your power, your striking, your knockouts. How are you going to deal with Jacare's ground game? Do you plan on preparing for the ground or just trying to keep it on the feet?
I'm good wherever the fight goes. I'm okay with taking him down and working some ground and pound in his guard also. When you think of a fight and you've been training for so long, we have a lot of well-rounded fighters in the middleweight division, so you have to prepare for every single aspect of martial arts. So I've been working, training for top-level BJJ guys, so anywhere the fight goes, I'm okay with.
Yeah, and I want to give some shout-out to Coach Manu and your guys, Warren Thompson, Wayne Barrett. How has training with top-level kickboxers helped you in your career?
It's good. You know, it gives you that different look. Guys who are who stand up for a living, they're tighter with their strikes and, you know, their kicks, their knees. And ultimately, that means that you have to be also whenever you're sparring, you know, in training, or else, you know, obviously they're going to be able to cut you up or get through a little more. So it definitely helps sharpen you up.
I mean, you've won 7 of 9 in pretty devastating fashion with that stand-up. Obviously the two losses to Robert Whittaker and Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva, that loss, by the way, was called the 2017 Robbery of the Year by Sherdog. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, you know, after your loss to Whitaker, you said you pushed the pace a little bit too hard, and then you lost that decision to Anderson because you might not have pushed the pace enough. You've won two straight since. How have you been able to find a healthy medium?
Just getting cleaner with my strikes. I believe over the last year, or right after the Anderson, or a little right before, is when I started working with Manu. And he's great with getting the strikes out. I thought in the Anderson fight, I was very patient. You know, that was the beginning of me working my strikes with him. And just trying to be patient and figure out ways to get to guys without overextending or put myself at a lot of risk.
Absolutely. You know, and this is the first time the UFC's been to North Carolina in nearly 10 years. You know, being that you're from there and you run your gym there, what sort of an impact do you think this will have on Charlotte, and what impact do you hope that the city itself has on the UFC?
Yeah, you know, I want to sell out. Want to sell out the show and, you know, give everybody a good show and all the other fighters perform. So the UFC will be like, hey, you know, we need to come back here soon and just kind of make MMA even bigger in North Carolina. I know the UFC haven't been back before. Our commission in North Carolina had some rules, you know, that other commissions don't, so they had to work those out and stuff like that. So just making the relationship good to where they can come back and want to come back.
Do you know what the main event was the last time the UFC was in Charlotte?
I don't.
It was Takanori Gomi versus Kenny Florian. That's how long ago it was. It's almost 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Were you at that, being based in Carolina? Or were you based in New Mexico at the time?
No, I've always lived in North Carolina. I just used to go out to New Mexico and train. I've spent like half of the year out there training.
So were you at that event 10 years ago?
No.
Okay. So you fought three times in 2016 and three times in 2017. This fight's in January, obviously. Are you hoping to do the same this year in 2018 if all goes well?
Sorry, say it again.
You fought three times in 2016, three times in 2017. This fight's in January. Are you hoping that in 2018 you can fight three times again or somewhere along those lines?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I want to stay active. I'm one of these guys that, you know, like to stay out the guy and stay fighting as much as possible, stay training, stay healthy. So, yeah.
And what are some of the things you're doing in camps and training? I mean, health is a big issue, you know, with the sport. So what are kind of things? Are you doing anything different that, you know, we traditionally don't know? I know some fighters do their running, strength and conditioning, boxing. Anything special for you to keep things interesting?
Yeah, well, I mean, pretty much, you know, everybody's doing the same thing with, you know, a little tweaking here and there.
Are you influenced by any boxers? Do you like Lomachenko? Everyone seems to be following the Lomachenko footworks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I watch boxing. I watch kickboxing. I watch the high-level guys, and I pick up a little bit from, you know, everybody and try to implement it to my game. Yeah, Lomachenko has good footwork. Footwork has always been, like, the focus from day one. But it's a little MMA. It's a little different to try to implement the footwork so much, because then you have takedowns and stuff, and if you're turning out, you're like running into takedowns, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a tad bit. Some is good, but everything is not.
Yeah, it's not all applicable.
Now you're speaking Joe's language. We start getting to footwork and the X's and O's. All right, Derek. Well, we also wish you the best of luck this weekend against Jacare. Should be an exciting fight. I mean, Derek Brunson is seldom in non-exciting fights, so tune into that one. Again, it's on Fox in the U.S. It's on CTV2 and TSN5 in Canada, and the main card begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. And again, thanks for your time, Derek.
All right, thank you. Right.
That was Derek Brunson. Big main event fight for him in his backyard in North Carolina, and that's going to be on Fox, so a very big platform for Derek Brunson. I mean, this card a Fox card is quite as stacked as they usually are, but still, you know, as a fight fan, I'm always eager to watch these fights.
Yeah, lately they've been, like, I mean, what I'll always say it, I'm one of these people that believe when you have the two best people fighting, you're not necessarily going to get the best fight. Both guys are really cautious. There's a lot on the line. There's a lot, you know, to, you know, risk versus reward. But when you have two guys who are still hungry, aggressive, wanting to make a name, you know, they just got moved to the main part of the card, they're going to perform. You know, they have to perform. It's like do or die for these guys, and they always perform to be the best show. So I won't be surprised if this fight card will be better than the pay-per-view we just saw.
Yeah, well, the pay-per-view we just saw, I felt did not have a whole lot of high points,
yeah,
unfortunately. I think we saw great performances, But it wasn't one of those ones where like, oh, that fight was really good. Other than I think Cater and Burgos, I think was the best fight. Yeah. And that's why it was given fight of the night. But yeah. And that was really the only fight where I was really on the edge of my seat. Aside from that first round,
yeah, I thought Burgos was running away with it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I thought Burgos had won the first two rounds.
Yeah,
no problem.
I thought he had his good range control. I thought he had everything all set up.
Yeah, that's tough. You get hit. Sometimes you don't know where you are, and
Everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face.
Yep. I guess that's why that expression holds true, right?
Yes. Still.
Yeah, so one thing that was officially announced this past week was UFC 223, Khabib versus Ferguson. Well, I guess Ferguson versus Khabib because he's the interim champion.
Yep.
But not a whole lot of clarity as to what exactly is going on with that division. You know, I think I got the most clarification. I'll pat myself on the back like Barry Horowitz.
There you go. Take it.
Yeah, I think that the most clarification from Dana, where I said to him, Let me see if I have this straight.
Was this before or after the little
heated? This is after the press conference.
Okay, all right.
So after
this
the press
is after
conference.
You guys had your little heated thing?
No, this is before.
Okay.
Before the
heated Maybe he would have changed his answer.
Because the people kept asking him, so is Conor still the champion? What's that going on?
He's probably annoyed with those questions,
too. He was like, I addressed that. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I just put it to him how I understood it and said, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, there you go.
So what I said to him was, yeah, why don't we just play the clip? I'll play the clip. Here's Dana White and myself discussing what happened with Ferguson and Khabib, and what the current state of the lightweight division is. I'm joined by UFC President Dana White. Now, usually after a fight, if somebody doesn't speak English, there's a translator. I feel like we need a translator for that UFC 25 press conference. So let me see if I'm interpreting this correctly with Conor McGregor. As of today, this moment, he has not been stripped of the title. But if he doesn't commit to defending the title, I guess leading up to that fight's for the undisputed title, and you're just going to move on?
Correct.
Okay, so as of right now, he's still technically the champion.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. So this is a big year.
It was pretty simple. You just laid it out. It's because we made it very clear, no translator needed.
Yeah, I know. And there was a little beating around
the book. You're not that much of a genius that you figured out something that everybody else couldn't figure out.
I'm doing the math in my head, you know, carry the two. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
1 + 1 equals 2.
So we've got a lot of big fights coming up. But, you know, Khabib versus Tony, this fight's been scheduled in 2015, 16, 17, and now again in 18. If this fight doesn't happen, are you just going to consider it cursed?
No, this fight's going to happen. I'm very, very positive this fight will happen.
You know, I asked Tony, he's on that big win streak. Khabib's 25-0. Could these be the two best fighters on the planet right now in any division?
Yeah, oh, definitely. They're definitely two of the best fighters in the world. Everybody knows that follows the sport. To go 25-0 is incredible. It's unbelievable. It's unprecedented.
So there's Dana White. He says Conor is still the champion at the time of that interview. Conor still is considered the champion. If you go to the website, UFC.com, it says that it's an interim title fight. But it seems like this is what I take from it. If Conor doesn't agree to fight the winner of that fight on a particular date or time frame, probably date because they know where the big events are going to be, that he's going to get stripped of the title.
Yeah, this could potentially be the world championship, right?
Yeah, it probably will be. The fight rolls around, it probably will be for the undisputed title.
But it might, again, Conor is a fighter. It might bother him to say, hey, you know, I'm giving it up. It might hurt him. It might bother him.
You know what,
it might
encourage
him to come back.
If I'm Ferguson or Khabib, I'm okay with this. Like, if
for sure.
If these are the two scenarios, the scenario A is the winner of this fight is the interim champion but is guaranteed to fight with Conor McGregor on a particular date, cool. If the other scenario is I'm the undisputed champion, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a win-win for whoever
but
whoever
even
wins
as
that fight.
Even whatever happens, stripped or not stripped, your name is going to have so much weight behind it because every interview, I think, you know, every interview we've had, Aaron, we've talked about Conor. So, I mean, every time we talk about Conor, which is every episode, every time you go on any MMA site, his name's there, and your name's going to be attached with it. The weight behind that is incredible to have.
The weird thing about it is I spoke to both Khabib and Ferguson afterwards, and it seems both of them are hoping that it's for the undisputed title. If I was those guys, I'd want it to be for the interim title. Like I want that next shot of Conor. That's the big prize, not the belt.
Yeah, I just think they're sick of waiting, right?
Yeah, but
of
what
course,
I mean,
but
what
I mean
is
like, from their perspective, you can't think, oh, I want the lesser belt, right? They want the championship, right?
No, I disagree with you. I think if I'm that fighter, I say the big prize for me is Conor McGregor. I want to be the guy that beats up Conor McGregor
really?
And takes the title from him. Yeah, because
that's
think of how much, what's more lucrative, getting that title and being the undisputed champion or getting to fight
well,
Conor?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, it would be to win the undisputed, you know, world champion. I think that would be more important to me than that the big payday from Conor or beating Conor.
But you're taking a Cadillac over a Bentley here.
I don't know. I mean, I'm telling you, it's something as a martial artist to have. When you remember, you dreamed, you don't dream about fighting Conor McGregor when you're a kid. You're dreaming about owning that belt and the
okay, but think of it this way.
Thing behind the belt. I'm saying, as a post champion, I'm saying, yeah, as sitting on this side of the mic, damn right, the Conor fight. I want the interim belt. I want Conor. I want that fight. But as a champion, I would want it to be a title.
So here's
fight.
A question: when you beat Mark DeBont, did you consider yourself the champion, or do you still feel like you had to beat Nicky Holsken at some point?
It all depends. It changes.
I mean, you were the real champion. That
wasn't
interim.
I get that question a lot. I just think it was bad timing for everything. I think it was an issue because I was supposed to fight Nicky again earlier, but he left because of an injury. So he didn't go. Then Mark DeBont changed. So, I mean, there was a lot of changes, but, I mean, that's a fight I would have liked to have had. That's
the
fight.
Holsken fight?
Yeah. Yeah, well, for sure.
I'm sure
like,
you
want to
get that one back. Yeah.
I mean, I would still laugh about it now, but I see what those, like, when you see, like, the old guys, the Robert De Niro and those old guys fighting. Hey, me and Nicky might fight when we're 60, but we would both love to, like, do it again. But, I mean, just bad actions in the sport, bad timing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you also had head injuries, and that's why you walked away.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm sure you'd be
lobbying.
But
we still had a lot of tension for like 2 years after. Mm-hmm. There was still a lot of tension between the two of us because it's a fight that we shared something special in there. And I mean, we still stay now, whatever, we're all cool and friendly now, but we definitely shared something special there where, you know, we knew, like, even after that fight, he's like, you're going to be the world champion. He told me that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I was like, well, I know I'm better than you. You just caught me, you know. Like, I had nothing to do. I was still new to the sport, right? And he had 100 fights. I only had 12 when I fought him. So I mean,
right.
It was a different timing. But yeah, he knows what he felt in there. We fought for fight of the year.
Yeah,
it was one of the most it was the most watched kickboxing fight Gloria has had.
Really, ever?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, me and Nicky in Japan.
That was a fun fight.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it's weird that I'm sitting across from the person that was in it.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
crazy.
That's all.
We're further than usual today. It's a little weird. I'm like an extra booth away from Aaron, so we're far away. So it feels like I'm yelling at you from over here.
But know that I never take that for granted. It's like being with like a war veteran. No disrespect to actual war veterans.
No,
but I mean,
no.
You getting to watch.
They need the respect, not me.
Yeah. But knowing that I've watched you compete in such a high level kickboxing fight. And what you went through, like I really respect that. So know that every week when I'm looking at you.
Thank you. Coffee's on you every week then. Thank you.
All right. You're in. If that's the way you want it,
I'm
good.
I'm kidding. I feel better buying coffee. I'd rather buy you a coffee every time.
I know, it makes you uncomfortable. I'm like, oh, it's my week. You're like, whatever, sure.
Like, you'll ask me, is it my week? I'll always say it's my week because I would never want anyone to say it's their week or they did 2 weeks over me. I'm happy to be here with you. I'm happy to share, you know,
Your parents raised a nice boy. I actually started following your dad on Twitter.
Really?
I saw he liked one of the tweets. I'm like, I'm going to follow Emilio.
I'm telling you, he watches the show more than anyone. He's actually in Dominican right now, so he's not listening. He'll have to catch up when he comes back.
Yeah, I hope he's having a good time.
Oh, yeah, he's enjoying. He loves his hammocks and his cervezas and beaches. Yeah. Oh, my dad's loves those vacations.
Yeah, my wife's always like, why are you ordering a drink at like 8 in the morning when I'm at an occupancy? I'm like, why wouldn't I be? Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you sleeping, drinking, Aaron?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are you doing?
When I'm at those all-inclusive resorts, I just want to have like a nice buzz going the whole day.
Yeah,
I don't need to go crazy. But,
I honestly, everyone's like, oh, it's all-inclusive. When I go there, I don't want to do a thing.
Yeah, same
like,
with me.
I don't want to do anything. I want to
sit
on the beach. I get upset when I'm asked to play volleyball. I don't want to do no party shots. I want to drink. I want to enjoy food. I want beach. I want to listen to the water. Don't talk to me. I don't want to do anything. Yeah. I don't want to kickbox, even kickboxing. I don't even want to look at it. I don't want to watch anything to do with martial arts. I want a week of just beach.
It's been like the 6 years since I've gone to one of those. My kids need to get older. Let's go.
Yeah, even if you take the kids, it'd probably be more exhausting for you guys than
vacation. Well, we took a kid last time. We took the two, like, he was 2 years old, and we took him to Aruba.
And?
He had it was good. We did okay.
But as parents, I mean, they're okay. The flights. Now that I travel so much, it's like the flight as parents must be
my
very
My kids
tough.
Are great on planes.
When
they're
you
terrible
that,
at sleeping in at home,
but
on
planes,
they're good, yeah.
Because if you're that parent, I think of like, it's quiet, you're going overseas, and then all of a sudden your kid's crying in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Everybody on that plane hates
course.
You.
Yeah,
everybody hates you. You have to sit on that plane knowing everybody hates you.
Yeah, no, but I think people need to be more empathetic towards that.
100%.
I know as someone who has kids now, I'm so much more empathetic.
For sure.
I've offered to help people out.
Well, I mean, it's like everything. I mean, it's like a server. If your wife is someone who works in the service industry and relies on service, tips or whatever like that at a restaurant, I mean, once you know someone who's in it, then you appreciate it more. Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, like I'm going to tip my proper amount because I value what they do.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Right? So.
Yeah. I envy your dad right now.
There you go.
I'm glad he's having a good time. So on Instagram recently, Nate Diaz, he wants to return in May or June to the UFC. He's saying,
what do you call it? The real fighters
it's about
or something?
Time. Yeah. I mean, I think the fight to make, there's two fights that I'd like to see that people have been throwing around on Twitter. Eddie Alvarez or Kevin Lee. And sign me up for either of those.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. I thought you were going to say Connor. I was going to say I'm out.
No,
I don't want Connor.
I'm with you.
I don't want Connor.
Yeah.
I don't want it anymore. It's done. Long gone.
So that would be a fun fight to see, and I think it's going to be a good litmus test for whether or not Nate is pay-per-view like is a good headliner. Because if you know, it'll be interesting to see if Connor elevated Nate Diaz to a point where he can headline a pay-per-view where there's no title on the line, and bring in a good buy rate, good gate. I'm tired of pay-per-views always being headlined by title fights. Like, really? To me, I'd rather see Nate Diaz and Alvarez headline with a title fight as the co-headliner for a 5-round fight instead of a 3-round fight with those guys. Like, I think the biggest fight should always be the top fight.
Yeah, but it depends what makes it a big fight, right?
Well, here's my example that I always use. UFC 215, I believe it was in Edmonton. Was it 215? Yeah, 215 was in Edmonton. And the original lineup was Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg.
Okay, and then it got shifted. I think I know where you're going now. Yeah.
No, it was Shevchenko and Nunes, and it was Ngannou and Dos Santos. Borg got hurt week of or whatever, and Dos Santos popped for a USADA anti-doping violation, potential USADA anti-doping violation. So that fight was off the card. But when that card was in its infancy, and those were the three fights, I said they should have headlined with Francis and Dos Santos.
Yeah.
Because that to me is
that.
A bigger
you
fight.
You mentioned that in the
yeah,
on
that
the
to
show.
Me, yeah, it's a bigger fight. And that's what you should do more often than just forcing a title fight to be the main event. Like, why make it would put your fighters in a better position if you made that the main event. And I don't think fighters care that much if they're the main event or not. I don't think I think they'd rather like if you said
I think
to a,
they would. I think
if you
they
said
do.
To Demetrius Johnson, you can headline this pay per view against Borg, or we can headline with Dos Santos and Francis and potentially make more money, take the money. I don't know. That's my opinion.
But to say you're headlining a card, the extra promotion, the extra media attention, your name and face bigger on the posters, it's saying UFC 223,
yeah,
you know,
I guess
Bronstetter versus something, you know, like it means something.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
means
that's true.
Something, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's tough. And again, there's a lot of weight classes that aren't as exciting. I mean, there's always the controversy with Demetrius Johnson. So would Demetrius Johnson not get, you know, ever be on the main event? Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a point, though.
Yeah, that's just from my standpoint. I think that's a better way to do it.
But it just comes back at what's an exciting fight. Is it based on what the fans think? Is it based on what's riding in the fight? I mean, if it's Demetrius Johnson, you know, winning the most defenses, may not be as big as a non-title Ngannou fight. So, I mean, depends. I think it would have to depend, and I think no matter what, there'll be controversy on what's the biggest fight.
Well, going back to Nate Diaz, one thing I spoke to Dana White about last week was Nate Diaz and the Diaz brothers, but also a whole other bunch of topics. I gave him odds on who he thinks are going to fight in the next year and some other UFC storyline ideas and potential outcomes, and he told me what his predictions were, or at least his picks were, based on those particular odds. So I'm going to play that clip right now. Indulge me here for a second.
Okay.
So will Conor McGregor fight more than once in 2018? Yes, I'm giving you plus 175, no minus 230.
I'm going to take the odds. I'm going to say yes.
Do you think he'll fight more than once in 2018? Okay. Will GSP return to the UFC in 2018? Yes is plus 150. No is minus 200. I'm giving you underdog odds.
I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to say yes and plus 150.
Oh, good news for Canada. Will Ronda Rousey fight in the UFC in 2018? Yes is plus 800. I'm giving you 8-1 odds.
Okay.
And no is minus 1,000.
I'm going to take no at minus 1,000.
You're not going to make a lot on that. But, you know, you got to take the chalk sometimes. Or not take the chalk sometimes, rather. Will Brock Lesnar fight in the UFC in 2018? Yes, plus 500. No, minus 700.
I'm going to take the odds again and say yes.
Wow. Okay. You're blowing my mind here a little bit. Will John Jones fight in the UFC in 2018? I don't know if you can comment on this one, but I'm going to give you yes plus 150, no minus 190.
I'll take the yes at plus 150.
Wow. Okay. Will either Diaz brother, not both Diaz brothers like last year, either Diaz brother fight in 2018? Yes is plus 130, not great odds, but no is minus 155.
Those are horrible odds.
Well, I mean, it's a tough question.
Yeah, that's a horrible odds. But I'm going to go with the yes at plus 130.
We've got a big year ahead of us, ladies and gentlemen. All right, what else do we got here? Let's take a look at page two. All right. How many UFC pay-per-views will break a million buys? Over 1.5, under 1.5, even money?
I'm going to take the over.
Will any new weight classes be added in 2018? Yes, plus 300. No, minus 375.
I'm going to say no.
All right, I like that answer. New champions in 2018? Over 3.5, under 3.5. I'm not going to ask you who's going to win fights. That would be unfair of me.
Yeah, I'm going to take the that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I'm going to take the under.
All right. Zuffa Boxing, or a similar boxing entity, whatever it's named, holds its first event in 2018. Yes, minus 200. No, plus 160.
The minus 200.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with the yes.
I have faith in you.
I'm
going to
go with the yes. I like it.
All right.
Your faith.
Will CM Punk fight in the UFC in 2018? Same question as last year. Yes, minus 200. No, plus 160.
Why is yes minus 200?
Well, but I think he'll probably fight again. No, he's hanging around.
I like the odds earlier. Now they're getting horrible. I'm going to go with the yes.
All right, cool. All right. We've got a big year coming up potentially with the UFC. It's a lot of great things on the horizon.
So, Joe, if those do come into fruition, we've got John Jones fighting this year. We've got Brock Lesnar fighting this year. We've got GSP fighting this year. We've got one of the two Diaz fighters fighting this year. We've got Conor fighting twice this year based on Dana White. Taking those odds. So
well, it would be the best year of MMA. If that comes true and Dana's saying what's true, it's the best year in MMA.
Well, people say a lot of things about Dana White. One thing you can't say is that he's not brimming with confidence because those are some ballsy picks. I mean, again, I will emphasize that those were based on the odds that I gave him. So it's not him saying he's for sure going to fight this year. I said Brock 5-1 odds on
him. And he's the best promoter in the world, you know?
I agree with that. So. I agree with that, you know? Dana catches flack sometimes, and people even were like, "Oh, way to stick it to Dana White." When him and I got into like that debate, and my intention is not to stick it to Dana White. I respect Dana White.
Yeah, no, for sure. What he's done is amazing.
I'm just trying to ask
questions
he's
done
that I want the answers to.
He's not doing it in your sterile cookie cutter way of professionalism, and he wears T-shirts, fight T-shirts, jeans. He swears, he curses, he says it how it is. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's how the sport got to where it was, right? But that's how it became a $4 billion property.
I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's sad to see, but we're having a change in CEO at Glory.
I saw Marshall Zelaznik taking over.
Yeah, we have Marshall Zelaznik coming in as the CEO. So good international experience. He was able to bring UFC into a lot of international markets. So I think that's the plan for Glory, try to get him in. And our now former CEO has such great ties in the U.S., so he's going to do a lot of good work
on taking over North American operations.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a good move for Glory and just... I mean, the efforts that John Franklin has done to get Glory where it has, it's just amazing because John needs a lot of credit because he took Glory over when there was that, after Glory 17, there was a big down in kickboxing. John Franklin took this company from nothing back up to where it was before. So, I mean, big credit to John Franklin, and I'm excited to be working with Marshall.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things about Marshall. Anybody who worked with him when he was at his position at Zuffa had great things to say about him.
I mean, so I executive vice hands. President, man, that's a big role to have in the UFC and a good resume and credentials to have for kickboxing. So, I mean, you're going to hear it over and over. I'm here to build this North American sport of kickboxing.
Let's get an event in Toronto.
Let's get it. We're trying. So hopefully he's...
Any update on that?
I hope... No, I'm still waiting.
I'm going to ask you every week.
Yeah, I'm good with it. Well, hopefully Marshall's got some ties in the Canadian...
The commission's machine has been broken for like a couple months from what I understand. They're not able to get events approved.
We're going to have to go in one day, Aaron.
just go to the door.
Kick down doors.
Let's do that on the Joe Valtellini channel.
Doors.
Joe Valtellini goes to the commission's building and starts yelling at the commissioner.
That's it. They need something. Whatever we're doing, this nice approach ain't working.
Yeah.
We need something.
Joe Valtellini shows up and threatens commissioner. That'll go over well.
There you go.
That'll get you some more subscriptions at least.
I have a question for you. Have you been thinking more about the weight cut? Are we going to do that weight cut for you?
I've been thinking about it. I mentioned it to Shane Burgos at Media Day, and the guy who was with him was like, "No, don't do that, man. You don't want to do that. You don't want to cut the weight."
Yeah. So yeah, you're still thinking?
I'm thinking about it.
All right.
We'll see.
All right.
I weighed myself again. I'm still at 148.
And what's our goal? 135, we said, if we're going to do it?
Well, 136. Right. 136.
Okay.
I'm not fighting for any titles.
All right.
As much as Dana White says...
A lot of commissions say you got to be at 135.
Dana White says a Jewish champion would be huge, so maybe that'll...
That's it.
Did you hear he said that last
week?
Yeah,
I heard that.
Jewish champion.
Yeah, who was he talking with when he was saying that?
Boston Herald. Boston Herald Radio. Okay. I don't remember how it came up, but he was like,
"Oh,
yeah,
I heard
it'd
be
crazy
I was like,
if they had a Jewish champion." And I, and then I tweeted out, "They don't have any Jewish people in the UFC."
We have this Israeli fighter in glory. That's really, really good.
What's his name?
Itai Gershon.
Oh, I've seen him fight. Yeah,
yeah, pretty good, man. He's really good, very talented, very, very good with his kicks. Like, I mean, very talented fighter.
Well, in Israel, they all learn Krav Maga, right? Which is
yeah,
a stand-up.
Which is a stand-up
form,
yeah.
So I mean, Ariel actually corrected me. Ariel Hawani tweeted me saying Jared Gordon is a is Jewish, and then I sent Jared a message saying I didn't know that. I apologize for overlooking you. And he goes, actually, I'm a born again Christian.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know Jared Gordon's backstory. He almost died. Like, he had major substance abuse. He had a heroin addiction.
Was he on a podcast recently?
He was on Ariel's podcast.
Okay, maybe I listened to part of it. Then it sounds familiar.
Yeah, so I'd love to have him on the show to tell his story. It's a very important story to tell.
Yeah, I think it's a very important story to tell in martial arts. A lot of people don't understand. They see what's just on TV. So if we can get more of these backstories on how positive martial arts has influenced people's lives, man, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
Even Randy Marcos this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, people coming out of gangs and street fights and poverty. And I mean, you got to respect it. And I've always said it. I mean, what I just love about the sport sometimes, and I sit and I reflect, and I'll be at a glory event and I'm looking and I'm just like, look, I became a world champion based on this little Scarborough hometown. And then I'm sitting and talking to, you know, Sitichai Sitsongpinang, who grew up, you know, in Thailand with nothing.
Yeah,
and
with nothing.
We're in the same
picking
path with the same goal, and we're just here together. And I mean, I think this is so beautiful. You know, we all came from different struggles in life, but we all made it to where we wanted to get to in life. Which, I mean, it's amazing.
Speaking of great stories, I unearthed a great story this week with Calvin Kattar. I had read about it online. And so Calvin is actually a big fight promoter in the New England region. He owns regional MMA organization.
Something I want to do here,
that he
too.
Bought. Yeah, he bought it, and he's been making it really big.
Nice.
And he was fighting, but he was mostly spending his time running his promotion. And the UFC called, and they offered him a fight against Andre Feely, who's fighting this weekend, on very short notice. And Calvin was like, I didn't realize I was this close to getting a shot. So he goes in. He wins against Andre Feely on short notice, and then he wins against Shane Burgos. He's got a great career going on now in the UFC. But on top of running that promotion, another story about him that I read was when he first was practicing martial arts, learning martial arts, he said to his family, I want to become a professional mixed martial artist. Like, his family are all very successful in business.
Okay.
And he said, I want to become a professional martial artist. And they said, well, if you want to become a professional artist, you need to prove mixed martial artist, you need to prove to us that you have the goods. And his dad is a really big guy. And they said, if you can choke your dad out, we'll let you do this.
Yeah.
So him and his dad go out on the front lawn.
That's unreal.
In a city outside Boston, Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And they start scrapping. And he...
Was he training at this time,
I guess? Yeah, he was training and everything. He was like, good to go.
So probably an easy submission.
So he gets on his dad's back, and then suddenly the neighbors come out, and they're like, is everything okay?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it's fine. You guys go in the house, we're good.
Yeah, yeah.
They restart it, and he chokes his dad out. He chokes his dad, submits his dad, and
awesome.
Starts his career.
That's
what
awesome.
A great story.
Yeah, it is a good story.
You
hey,
know what? I don't want my kid to beat me in anything.
Yeah.
I do want him to be better than I am at a lot of things.
Oh,
I just don't want him I don't want him to beat me up.
My dad's line is hilarious. He always says it. He's like, yeah, you'll beat me. You're bigger, you're stronger. Things. He's like, I know where you sleep. That's what he keeps telling me. I know where you sleep. I was like, true. He's like, I'll use my brain. He's like, you can use your muscles. He goes, I'll use my brain. And I was like, all right. True.
Yeah, I mean, see, dads don't want to give their kids an inch.
Oh, that's what my dad's trying to always would teach me. He'd always make funny stories, and now that I get older, I see it. He always talked about, he was a mechanic for Toronto Ambulance, so he'd have all these young kids working for him. So they would run back and forth from the toolbox, and they're just wasting so much energy. Where my dad would take his time, he'd be the last one to start, but he lines out his tools, and he's the first one to finish. You know, so I mean. He's very efficient that way, and he's all about using his brain. So he goes, I know where you sleep. And he controls that, you know, he knows how to change a lock on a door. I don't. So regardless, I'd be in trouble.
That's amazing. It's amazing how that all works out. Yeah. Well, Joe, great week.
Awesome.
Look forward to seeing this event in Charlotte again. It's on 8 p.m. Eastern on TSN 5 and CTV2. So make sure you check it out, and we'll be back next week to break that down.
And are you going to that show?
No, I'm not going to Charlotte. Otherwise, I'd be there already.
Yeah, that's right. You would be.
Workouts would be tonight. Well, anyways, if you check that out, it'll be a good card. I'm looking forward to Brunson versus Jacare, and we'll talk about it next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.